From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
Lisa Yoder is the Sustainability Coordinator for Summit County. In that role, she's responsible for overseeing programs and initiatives designed to measure, manage, and where possible, reduce the county's consumption of energy, fuel, water, and other natural resources. Everything.
I.e. everything, yes. Lisa joins us in the first part of the show to discuss the results of her efforts and the county's efforts for the year 2014 and what sustainability goals and objectives the county has earmarked for the year 2015.
Then in the second half of the show, we have a variety of highlights from the news this week. We'll be talking about automakers, fuel economy claims, and the Clean Air Act.
Oh, really? There's a problem there?
Yeah, it turns out there's an issue.
Okay.
We'll be talking about beekeepers working at airports. This is one of my favorites.
Okay.
We love talking about bees. And we'll also be talking about some political news.
Right. Give you a little update on the XL pipeline, because actually today the bill will land on the president's desk, and the word is that he's going to veto it tout suite.
Immediately.
Yes, and send it right back. And so we'll give you some details on that. And also some information on a climate denier who is being called out as a possible fraud or so in some sorts, where he's not very up on his ethical standards with respect to reporting where he is actually getting his funding from. We'll talk about that. That's Willie Soon is his name, and we'll explain a little more about that later in the show.
Very suspicious.
Yes. So it's This Green Earth. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We'll be back with more right after these words from our underwriters.
Hi, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local source for recycling and garbage service and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. As you recycle, please remember, glass cannot go in your residential curbside recycling bin. Help keep Summit County Recycling clean. SummitCountyRecycles.org.
Hi, I'm Maren Mullen, and I'm a Recycle Utah board member. Did you know that water conservation is what we're really all about? And you thought it was only recycling. We save your H2O. How? By encouraging you to recycle more, by teaching our students how to conserve water, and by making it possible for you to drop off hazardous waste at our collection events. Yep, we're all about saving your water, because we can't live without it. Recycle Utah is a nonprofit organization bringing conservation ideas to you since 1990. Check us out at recycleutah.org.
Welcome to This Green Earth, weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. And speaking of sustainability, and not just concepts, real sustainability.
Actual sustainability.
Lisa Yoder joins us. She is the sustainability coordinator for Summit County. And she's here to talk about what the county has been doing with respect to sustainability. Programs, measures, initiatives, et cetera, and some of the goals and objectives looking ahead for this year in that area, too. So, Lisa, thanks for coming on the show this morning.
Great. Thank you. It's good to be here.
So let's just start. As a sustainability coordinator, we talk about your general goal is to kind of look at how the county consumes consumes natural resources, whether it's in the form of fuel or energy, electricity, natural gas, water, kind of falls under that purview in some ways. And so look at that, the impacts and the footprint of the county. And then also look at, I guess, in some ways, the waste that's generated by the county, too, with respect to recycling programs or so, and how to reduce that. And then figure out what measures and initiatives can we embark upon to reduce that impact. Do I have that right?
You've covered a lot, and that's what I do. I cover a lot of ground.
Yeah, you do cover, and that's the point. You cover a lot of ground. So you've been around for a couple years?
I just finished my second year with the county, yes. Okay. So I came in, and the council had adopted a goal to reduce carbon emissions 13% by the end of 2013. So in the year 2014, we continued that goal, and we've implemented energy efficiency upgrades and lighting upgrades to the Justice Center to reduce electricity usage there by about 15%. And we upgraded the HVAC system, heating and ventilating system.
Right.
We have a full year data on solar generation of the solar system put in on the public health building.
Oh.
And that has reduced demand of electricity for that building by 1/3.
Wow.
Really?
So, yes. That's providing 1/3 of the electricity.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Was that what kind of what you thought it would do?
Yeah. It actually is performing as expected.
That's great.
As calculated.
Good.
So we've also increased the number of CNG vehicles in our fleet, so that lowers our tailpipe emissions, and we continue to work at purchasing natural gas vehicles when we roll over. When we need to purchase new vehicles, we evaluate each vehicle for the most fuel efficient, and if it's a candidate for natural gas, we select natural gas for that vehicle.
Are these both, vehicles, sedans, or trucks, or other larger transportation-based vehicles?
Well, we look
mass transportation, like buses or so?
The bus system that's co-owned with Park City, that is being studied, whether those natural gas is applicable there due to the costs
right.
and the
infrastructure that
the
I
infrastructure,
think goes
yes.
along with
mm-hmm.
it.
But since we worked with the Sinclair station at the intersection of 40 and I-80, mm-hmm. and there's a natural gas station, refueling station put in there that serves the county and interstate travel as well as locals. So we have a much better infrastructure for those who want to go to natural gas.
You know what? I just was thinking of something. Natural gas has always been much less expensive on a kind of a per volume basis compared to gas. Back when gas was $4 or $3.50 or $3. Now that gas is down below $2. I wonder how that comparison is. Do you happen to know?
I drive a natural gas vehicle.
Okay.
Yes.
How's that
going? She knows very well.
I don't know what the price of gas is.
Well, it's under $2.
It's under $2. So I'm only saving 15, 20 cents a gallon right now.
Right now. But it's still,
and that's per gallon. What's your mileage per gallon?
Same mileage, 32 miles per gallon.
Got it.
But the emissions coming out of my tailpipe are cleaner than the air going into the air intake. So for me, it's not necessarily a bottom line. It's not an economic decision for me personally. It's about the tailpipe emissions.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's a good point because you're not emitting carbon dioxide, the only thing you're emitting.
Well, and particulates, I think,
not particulates or other volatile mm-hmm. chemicals. It's just basically water, H2O. It's literally, that's what you're converting. Methane.
I'll take your word for
okay.
it.
Okay. You're just converting methane into, actually, I take that back. You are emitting some smaller amounts of carbon dioxide. It's a much smaller amount of carbon dioxide and water.
Small amount.
But it burns, so that's how clean it burns.
Yes.
But also, you're still, look, even at gas at, I saw $1.83, $1.84 a gallon, you're still on a volume by volume basis, it's still, natural gas is still cheaper.
Right. And the gas prices will fluctuate.
Sure.
And the natural gas has stayed steady. The price is flat, and it has not changed in the 2 years that I've owned the vehicle.
That's an interesting point, too.
But I think the point that you brought up about what's coming out of the tailpipe as far as like particulate matter and pollution is a big deal too, because I think that's increasingly on our radar, even in Summit County and Park City. You know, for listeners, that's what that PM2.5, that particulate matter, is what creates the haze. You know,
yes.
in the inversion and that.
Right.
Visible pollution that's
yeah
so unhealthy for
exactly.
us. So,
but getting back to what the county is kind of on a moving basis, considering natural gas vehicles where it's applicable.
Where they're applicable, yes.
Okay, great.
And so, you know, the goals to increase the use of renewable energy countywide, we're embarking on that through the Summit Community Power Works. And increasing energy efficiency of residential residential homes is being pursued through the Be Wise Energize program that I'm developing at this time. So we've done a lot of work in laying the groundwork and budgeting for some projects in 2015. And the data that shows our emissions reduction, that's being quantified at this time with the year-end analysis that will be brought forth in within a month or so. So we can see our trend in the county of the county's decreasing carbon footprint.
Okay. So go back. When was the first year that the county measured its carbon footprint? Was it back in?
The baseline year is 2010.
2010. Okay.
And it used data from 2005 up till 2010 to see the baseline and the trend. And then we set a goal, and then we started measuring, and we see where our actual is compared to the trend if we did nothing.
Right.
And as we implement efficiency measures and changes, we can see how that adjusts the trends and how we move towards our goal.
And are you finding that these goals are still seeming reasonable and attainable? How are we doing?
Well, we're on track, but we've changed the way we, rather than quantifying the emissions reduction that throughout the nation they're finding that, you know, saying we're going to reduce our emissions 10% by 2015, we're coming at it from a different direction. Our goal is to reduce energy usage in the buildings by 10%, which is easier to measure. And as a result, then we quantify the emissions reduction that we get by using less energy.
Okay.
It's more of a focus on what you're using.
Yes.
Directly.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So things kind of worked out there, and you saw some successes, particularly in the area of the solar panels put on the public health building.
Yes.
So mm-hmm. Now, turning towards 2015, plans for more solar on the buildings?
Yes, we just selected a contractor to install 200 kilowatt system on the Justice Center. Now, that's a building that operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every day of the year.
Right.
Because it houses the police dispatch center and the jail.
Right.
So there's a huge energy consumer in that building.
Safe to say it's one of the bigger
by far
county
the biggest
sources of energy demand?
Yes.
It's, okay. So what would 200 kilowatts do on a percentage basis? Any sense of what that would reduce?
If I remember correctly, that would reduce about 10%.
10%? Okay. All right. So when is that scheduled to be installed? Sometime later this year?
It needs to be online by September 1st.
Oh, okay.
To take advantage of a Rocky Mountain Power rebate. So the council was forward thinking. They budgeted for the full amount of the installation, and then if we get it done by that date, we'll get a Rocky Mountain Power rebate.
Oh. Fantastic.
Of $54,000. It's a small percentage of the overall cost, but it's still beneficial.
What is the overall cost for something like that?
$425,000.
Okay. With $54,000 in potential rebate.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, that's about 15%. That's pretty good.
And then the council also allocated funds for a lighting upgrade to the courthouse out in Colville. So that will then again reduce electricity usage in that building. I don't recall right offhand the amount, but it's installing LED lighting consistent with the Summit Community Power Works program,
right.
To move to LED lighting.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about that Summit Community Power Work. So this is a group that was formed to work on the Georgetown University Energy Prize, right? And
right.
Both of you guys are involved in that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. We're both on the executive committee for it. And we have a number of initiatives and measures that we're going to be rolling out over the two-year period of the contest. The contest being simply seeing which community can reduce its electricity and natural gas consumption the most over a two-year period based on a baseline that's identified by Rocky Mountain Power and Questar Natural Gas, Questar Gas. And so what can we do? Summit Community Power Works' goal is to try to incentivize, educate, and compel residents to use less electricity and natural gas. And in addition to residential settings, municipal buildings and structures are also in play.
So they also count.
Yeah. So
doing, but commercial doesn't.
Commercial does not
count.
So the resorts,
okay,
energy use is not in play. The stores and restaurants are not included in these calculations. It's just residential consumption, municipal consumption, and schools. All three school districts in the county are included.
And what we're embarking on in 2015 is Be Wise, Energize. It's a whole home approach to weatherizing a house. And the council will be exploring the amount of bond funding they may want to put up to mm-hmm. provide a low-interest loan fund that citizens can borrow from to weatherize their home or install solar PV on their homes.
Oh.
So this program will be part of the Summit Community Power Works, all geared towards reducing our energy usage in the residential sector. This program focuses on residential.
Right. And when you say weatherizing, that includes what?
That includes air sealing. The most important thing first is to seal the whole envelope of the home. Then once it's sealed, it might include improving the insulation, evaluating the function of the furnace and insulating ductwork. Windows can be an option. It's
right.
often more expensive and less cost effective than insulating and air sealing, the two most important things to do. But we will have an energy auditor assess the home, list out the items that should be improved and could be improved, and then the homeowner can select, you know, the items that they want to upgrade and what amount of investment they want to make into their home to make it more comfortable, use less energy, mm-hmm. reduce emissions.
Right. And the thing is, we usually talk about solar, putting solar on a home, and that can be $15,000, $20,000, $25,000. But to weatherize your home, seal it via caulking or weather stripping. That's what's meant by sealing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's hundreds of dollars. It can be as little as hundreds of dollars to do that. Maybe $1,000 or $2,000. So it doesn't take a lot. And the bonding that the county is pursuing, that's what you're going to be discussing with the commissioners tomorrow, would go to providing low-interest loans to almost anybody.
To anyone
who's interested.
Well, we'll have qualifications. There's,
okay.
You know, of course, they have to be creditworthy.
Right.
Some of the initial requirements are that it be a single-family home.
Okay.
It has to be a primary exemption status within the county. And then there will be requirements something to the effect that you have to achieve a certain percentage of energy reduction. So the idea is that we are reducing energy consumption. So if somebody just wants to, for example, it wouldn't fund someone's new refrigerator. It's for
okay.
the envelope and structure of
Good
the
point.
Home.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's not for me to go out and buy a brand new washer dryer. That might be more energy efficient, but that's not what this is about.
No, this is about
it's not
the
about
structure
appliances. This
and
is about
the mechanical systems so that they operate as a whole unit the most efficient as possible.
Right. Okay. And then measuring the reduction in energy from there.
Right.
Consumption, demand, let's say, for gas or electricity. Okay.
And the program, what it'll do, it'll simplify the process for people. Because when you think about who's going to do my insulation, who's going to put in weather stripping, I wouldn't even know who to hire. So we're going to provide resources to that are highly trained to do this properly, and
okay.
we'll be monitoring quality on a very close basis and monitoring results over the next year or two after the after the improvements are made to each home.
So how are you going to monitor those results?
With utility bills.
Okay.
The homeowner will have to agree to play.
Sure.
And help us.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be fun to for them to watch and
right.
see.
So absolutely. Will there be any opportunity, you know, you were mentioning the envelope and having kind of that airtight house. I know that there are tests that you can have done to your home to find out how you're doing and where the weaknesses are.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any help in that area, or do you guys have suggestions of, you know, how people can get that done?
Yes, we'll provide a list of qualified energy auditors that have to be trained to our standards. Actually, they'll be trained to the state weatherization assistance program standards.
Wow, okay.
And we'll use the weatherization assistance program model that's geared for low-income residents.
Right.
And we'll expand that to all income levels who are interested.
Okay.
So the training, the systems are all in place, and they've been very effective since the 70s, and we'll use that model and go forward.
Okay. Hey, we're at the bottom of the hour. I'll tell you what, let's take a break for a couple of sponsors and underwriters. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation about some of the other activities going on in 2015, et cetera, including the county's climate action plan.
Great.
Some strategies there. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Mitch Martino, host of the Minor Nation Report on KPCW. Be sure to tune in every Monday morning during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher and in the afternoon on The Local View with Randy Barton. Stay up to date with your Park City High School sports, only in Park City, only on KPCW. Brought to you in part by UPS Stores, Rich Fine Realtor, and Elliott Work Group.
The Egyptian Theater presents Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Booker T. Jones on our intimate stage February 27th to March 1st. Booker T. Jones is a Grammy Lifetime Achievement winner and considered to be one of the architects of the Memphis soul sound of the 1960s as leader of Booker T. and the MGs. Tickets available at parkcityshows.com. The Egyptian Theater is a nonprofit organization and soulful supporter of KPCW.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental concepts and sustainability realities. I say
that's
that because
right.
We're speaking with Lisa Yoder. She's the sustainability coordinator for Summit County. And how many people does that cover? What's the population of Summit County?
38,000, yes.
Not counting all our visitors.
Not counting the visitors.
Right. That's full-time residents here.
During Sundance, the population quadruples.
Right.
Yeah.
But most of your sustainability efforts surround what the municipality, what the county's infrastructure is doing to reduce its energy use, its fuel use, like you were saying, natural gas, vehicles, et cetera. Lighting at the Justice Center, solar panels at the public health building, and other things. So we got a few more minutes. We just want to kind of continue the conversation there. Do you have any other projects that are coming up in 2015 that we might have missed, or even beyond that, like the climate?
Well, the goal, the way I approach this position is, first year was focused on primarily the county operations mm-hmm. and buildings. Second year. Focusing more on residential.
Oh, so it is branching
and
out.
And then the third year, when those programs are in place, the intention is to expand further to the commercial sector. So it's constantly reaching out further into the communities and more into the smaller communities within the county.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's how I've kind of approached it.
Right, right. Okay, so it's kind of growing out, evolving
yes.
out. Okay, and when's the last year we had greenhouse gas data on the county? You said 2010 was the baseline?
That was for county operations and facilities. There was another study done by the Brendel Group, a consulting firm out of Colorado, very highly regarded, and they did a greenhouse gas emission study of the county, the countywide emissions from citizens, businesses, from everything. And that phase one was done in 2011. It revealed the countywide total emissions. As you both know, we're in phase two, where we've hired the consulting firm back to look at how did we trend in the last 3 years with the countywide emissions, and what sort of strategies would be cost-effective to put into play to reduce emissions countywide, and how would we get citizens engaged in that? How would we get businesses engaged? And you two can probably speak more to that, since I was not at the last meeting.
We missed you at the last meeting.
Right. Nell and I and about 10 other individuals are members of a kind of ad hoc blue ribbon panel, let's say. Don't want to pat ourselves on the back too much.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. that we were invited by Lisa and the county to partake as members of the community in developing climate action strategies, or like you say, those strategies that can go to reducing our carbon footprint or greenhouse gas emissions, whether it's transportation-based, electricity-based, natural gas-based, et cetera.
And I think there are also some decisions to be made about, you know, what will be counted and what will be targeted.
Yes.
So, for example, do you count the, you know, carbon footprints of the tourists that come to town? And if so, how do you do that? And things along those lines.
Right. That was one thing we talked about at our initial meeting, because the city does. The city includes its transport, its transportation from its visitors under the city's footprint.
Right.
Including air flights.
Exactly. So it's sort of half of the travel. The city will count, and I think a lot of cities do it this way, will count the travel, you know, coming to the city, and then expect that, you know, the city that they came from would count the other half
of that.
Oh, I see.
So if you were to do that full picture, you know, if every town in the country did this, that's how it would be counted evenly.
Right. But we're one of the few, well, Park City is one of the few municipalities that does that. And when we compared ourselves to other mountain resort towns, Vail, Aspen, Jackson Hole, et cetera, we had a much, much larger, much greater footprint.
Right, because of that reason, because we count that. One suggestion was that we do it separately so that it's very clear what's the local town and what are tourists, which is an idea I like. But I think that we do need to count it, because we actively encourage tourists. That's an important part of our economy. It's not just like, oh, we can't help it, people are coming here. We're actively promoting that. And so if that's a key part of our economy, then we need to
take ownership
to do
of that.
Something about it. Yeah.
If we separated the visitors and had just the county emissions, could we then compare it to, we have a direct comparison to the other mountain towns?
Yeah, we have a more of an apples-to-apples comparison. Okay. But right now we have an apples-to-oranges thing going on. And so we kind of chatted about it's a good idea not to broadcast that too much because it gives the wrong impression.
Right.
But on a qualitative basis, we should be comparing ourselves, looking at least what are some of the strategies or actions that Vail and Aspen and Jackson Hole and Bend are doing, and what can we do here, maybe, you know, that they're doing, and what are we doing that they're not doing? So on a qualitative level, we should compare our efforts with their efforts.
Mm-hmm.
But on a quantitative basis, it's apples to oranges when it comes down to the hard numbers. So.
And then another piece, one of the interesting conversation points was what kind of a timeline are we looking at for this? So it's an action plan. So, you know, what are those actions? But then also, how short or long of a time period do you want that? Do you want it 5 years out, 10 years out, 50 years out? You know, how urgent do you want it to be? And the discussion, I think, centers around you want a sense of urgency to a certain extent, but you don't want to sell yourself short and have it done in 2 years and not have time to do the things you wanted to do.
So right. That's a good point.
A balance.
So some people kind of took a little poll, and most felt that there were a 5 to 10 year frame, a time frame was what we should set our strategies and goals for. And there were a couple in the room, including, I would say, me, that felt like, no, we need something less than 5 years. And in fact, there were a couple of people said, we need something this year. You know, we need to start getting something out to get residents in this county to start saving, reducing their energy consumption, their carbon footprint right now. Because we didn't know we live in a time machine. Park City has been living in a bit of a time machine, because this past January, this entire winter is one of the warmer winters that we've experienced. And in a long time, if not in its history, we'll find that out when winter is over. But there, we need to recognize that this could be not just a 1 in 50 year event that we're seeing this winter with these record warm temperatures that were in the beginning of the month. This could be soon become a 1 in 25 or a 1 in 20 year event or a 1 in 10 year event. So we need to do something. There were some people who felt we need to do something right now.
Well, and I think that's where the programs the county and Park City have already embarked on come in. And this climate action planning strategy does quantify and look at, including Summit Community Power Works, the Be Wise Energize program the county's embarking on, the initiatives that are in place fit under the climate action plan. So we are doing things today.
And they fit in today. Yeah, yes. That's the point. Yeah, yes. They do. They fit in under that box of let's do something today.
And then further, what additional things might we do?
Yeah.
Right.
So kind of wrap that up, summarize it. The Climate Action Committee that Nell and myself are on and others will be meeting again, I believe, in April.
Yeah, a few months out.
When a draft plan comes out, and we'll be reviewing that draft plan with some of the strategies that are outlined.
So and I was also going to mention, if you have comments on this, I think you can email Lisa or Chris or me. And give us those comments. Okay. Chris is laughing, so I'll give his personal cell phone number.
Well, we appreciate the citizens that came to the Climate Action Planning Group as a stakeholder group to help advise and guide this planning effort. So thank you for your commitment to that.
Okay. So, all right. Well, that's the sustainability world for the county.
That's the energy portion and the emissions portion.
Yeah.
We do work on everything from wilderness, possible expansion in the High Uintas, sheep grazing and its impact on the landscape. As you know, Bozak and the Snyderville Basin just bonded for additional open space and recreation money. So we will be looking at where our key pieces of property to purchase to protect and maintain, you know, wildlife habitat and beautiful open space that surround us. So we have a lot going on at the county.
We have a lot going on. And not to mention, you're probably involved a bit in the proposed pipeline, the Uinta Express Pipeline.
Yes. Last I knew, that was put on hold, temporarily.
Yeah. Yes. It's put on.
Time
that's what we heard.
To catch your breath.
Catch your breath and wait for oil prices to go back up.
Yes.
And then it'll be back on again. So, well, Lisa Yoder, sustainability coordinator for Summit County. Thanks as always for taking the time to come on the show and chat with us about what's going on with the county.
Thank you.
And congratulations on a great year.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Continued success.
Been great.
All right. Let's take another quick break for a sponsor. And when we come back, we'll turn our attention to some news items.
That's right.
Bees at airports. Auto manufacturers running afoul
of the Clean Air Act. I like that.
It's this green earth. Stay tuned.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties, formerly Prudential Utah. We have been helping locals and visitors with their real estate needs since 1976 and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information can be found at bhhsutah.com or at one of our 14 offices throughout Park City.
back to This Green Earth. Chris Cherniak, she's now Larson. Let's cover some environmental news items. There's a bunch, as always. No shortage of that.
Yeah. The difficult part is always choosing which pieces to cover.
Did that fire of the rail car, the rail train, oil train,
did that ever go out? I don't know.
I think it did.
As of our last show, it was still burning.
When we were talking, it had started, it was still burning last week, but I think it went out. And that was, real quick, that was Bakken shale oil, not Canadian tar sands. So let's be clear, it's that Bakken shale that is more volatile and more inclined to, exploding when there is a derailment compared to Canadian tar sands. So I just had to get that in because some people thought it was Canadian tar sands. And that's why we need the XL pipeline to reduce the amount of trains that are carrying oil. Instead, we have a pipeline. No, it's not Canadian tar sands.
This is something totally different.
This is Bakken shale.
All right,
we'll get into the pipeline a little bit later, but let's start out with something interesting.
Well, yeah, and this is kind of like a more, more good news piece, more fun piece. So we love to cover honeybees and pollinators.
Sure.
And we haven't done that in a few months, so I thought it was time for an update. And there's kind of a cool new trend, which is that airports are, they have thousands of acres of land, many of them, that can't be built on and just needs to remain essentially as kind of like open space. And so airports have started placing beehives, working with beekeepers and beekeeping clubs to place beehives on that land to increase the number of pollinators and then create products like, beeswax and honey and all of these cool things.
Some of them are even selling in an airport for $80 a jar. Airport
$87 for an ounce.
for airport honey.
Yeah. So each of these, like the latest airport to do this is in Quebec. And they have five hives at this point, each with about 70,000 bees.
Okay.
If it's successful there at the Montreal Mirabel International Airport, then they'll expand it to the other airport that they've got there. The first airport to do this, though, was actually in Hamburg in Germany in 1999.
Oh.
And then there's a whole list of other airports, including some that I'm sure everyone has flown through. O'Hare in Chicago does this. Seattle-Tacoma does this. St. Louis. So urban beekeepers are a huge fan of it, because these areas generally don't use like a lot of pesticides and herbicides. It's not like there are crops. They don't have those harsh agricultural chemicals around the airports. And the bees only have, a relatively small foraging range.
And I'm assuming that these hives are away from the runways themselves. Airports are huge complexes.
Yes.
So you could put these hives
right there, like miles
out in a fairly remote area.
Exactly.
It's not on the run near next to the runway where the bees might get caught up in the engine or
although that was
the
mentioned.
Boxes get blown
they
over.
Said, I remember a while ago there was a bunch of news coverage on like collisions with like geese and ducks.
Big things.
Bees don't so much matter. There have been a few swarms, but they actually think the swarms weren't related to the hives. They were just swarms of actually like native bees.
Right.
But still the beekeepers can help with those. But if there is a collision, it's not a big deal.
They say
it's clear that the plane wins in the collision. That was the quote.
The plane always wins.
The plane always wins. So they're not concerned about that. It's just kind of like a neat new trend. It's the honeybee numbers in hives have been dropping, which is why this is so important. And people have been seeing huge die-offs. So anywhere we can kind of like increase those numbers.
Yeah. And airports are a nice location for that to happen.
Yeah.
Well, good. That is good news. How did that sneak in to our news?
Good news. Why are we covering that? I have to share a fun fact that I learned. In the life of one bee, guess, this is a quiz, Chris.
Okay.
Guess how much honey one bee creates in its life.
I'm going to say.
How many teaspoons?
All right. Well, of course, it's either some ridiculously huge volume or some incredibly small
tiny
volume.
Tiny.
Like,
lean towards
I'm going to say a volume about the size of its body.
You know, you are close.
Really?
But a bee only creates 1/8 of a teaspoon. So actually probably even smaller than it's, depending on the bee.
Even smaller than itself. Yes,
imagine a teaspoon.
What is it doing all day?
Yeah, wasting its time out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it really doing it other than just flying around? Now we know the males, the drones, they do nothing. They literally do nothing, right? We've learned they leave the hive every morning. They go out, hang out with other drones,
right?
And then come back at the
end
of the day.
But they keep it warm.
No, they don't survive. They get kicked out in the fall. Don't you remember they get booted? I remember this because I'm a guy. They get kicked out of the hive in the fall, every fall, so they don't survive because they're useless. They don't even beat their wings to keep things warm.
All they do is mate with the queen. The air circulation.
That's all females are doing. All females over the winter, and then you know whatever males they repopulate in the spring. Yeah. So maybe on average, the female produces a lot more honey, but because the male produces zero honey,
we will have to get to the bottom of this.
It is spring. We need to talk to our local hive expert.
We do.
Doug.
Yeah.
Doug Fryer. We'll get him on in the spring. We'll talk and get an update on that. Okay, so that's our bee story.
Yeah.
What about the Clean Air Act one? And the automakers, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, so this caught my eye because I didn't initially think, okay, vehicle fuel ratings would be, you know, this big deal with the Clean Air Act. But multiple automakers have been fined and cited for kind of claiming that mileage is too high on their vehicles, or claiming that it's higher than it actually is a better way to say that. And so a few automakers, I think it was Kia and Hyundai, were fined like $300 million because they made this claim and it was false, and that's a violation of actually the Clean Air Act.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
I see.
And so that's kind of the teeth that the EPA is using to enforce this. So they just released like, you know, the pages and pages of guidelines on how exactly to do this testing and to take out any ambiguity, I think, in the areas where these automakers could kind of cheat. And they say most automakers are being honest about it. So they think that everyone that falls into that category will be pretty thankful because for these rules because they'll level the playing field.
Right.
So they're not going through a formal rulemaking process with the EPA because they think that just will take too long. It's just too long and bureaucratic and messy.
Oh.
So they're just releasing guidelines on how you go about testing your cars.
Okay.
Right now, automakers test their own cars and self-report, and the EPA just does occasional check-ins, but I think they're going to be doing increased auditing and things along those lines to make sure people are sticking with these rules.
So who was it? Kia and?
I think it was Kia and Hyundai.
Hyundai. And so basically they were saying their vehicles got 30 miles per gallon, when in reality it was 26 or 27 miles per gallon.
There were significant differences, not just like, oh, there's a couple
not
of miles.
A mile, five, maybe 10, 15, 20% less or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Oh, okay. Absolutely. And this $300 million fine was the largest ever penalty for a violation of the Clean Air Act.
Wow.
So it's interesting to hear. So, and I think this may have to do with, you know, now there are these regulations moving down the road. Automakers are going to need to increase mileage, you know, to an average of, I'm forgetting what it is, but like around 50.
It gets really high.
And so they want to make sure people are reporting accurately as those mileages increase and get to those places. So
yeah.
The average right now is about 25.
So a bit of ways to go. But that money matters. $300 million matters to companies.
Right. It's actually like a meaningful, it's not like $2,000 for your, exactly.
Probation. Okay. I'll tell you what. Let's see.
We have to talk about Keystone XL.
Okay, let me take another break, and we'll come back. We'll talk about that. What's going on? And we know what we have 30 seconds. We should see if it's been vetoed already.
Yeah,
it's this.
I'll hop online.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Hideout Canyon, Master Plan Community on the Lake, info at hideoutcanyon.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Beppler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
The Glittertind at Stein Erickson Lodge is a proud supporter of KPCW. The Glittertind restaurant offers regional American cuisine with Chef Zane Holmquist's seasonal menus. Located mid-mountain at Deer Valley Resort, the Glittertind serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily. Sunday brunch with live music. Reservations recommended. 645-6455.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson, and that's Chris Cherniak across the board, shuffling his papers.
Breaking news. It hasn't been vetoed yet, but it will be.
That's right.
This is the Keystone XL pipeline. The Senate last week passed a bill that basically is telling the president that he has to approve this pipeline. Okay. And 63 senators backed the pipeline. Now, the House approved it weeks ago, overwhelmingly.
So, right.
But the senators found 63 of them to vote for this bill, for this authorization. So it passed, and now it's going to the president's desk, and it's basically saying, approve this pipeline, Mr. President, and forcing him to do what? He's going to not approve. He's going to veto it.
And he's only vetoed, interestingly, two other bills in his entire presidency. So this is not something that he does frequently.
No. And that's far, 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 far fewer than many other presidents. But the word is that this is going to be the beginning of a number of vetoes that he's probably going to have to sign off on or sign, given the fact we have a Republican-controlled House of Representatives and Senate. So here's the thing. He's going to veto. And why is he vetoing? Well, basically for two reasons. First, the pipeline approval is still tied up in the state of Nebraska. It's in the Nebraska Supreme Court as far as who decides who approves the pipeline, not the route of the pipeline, but who has the authority to approve the pipeline. Was it the governor or was it another state agency that's typically responsible for approving pipelines? Well, the governor approved this pipeline after the Nebraska Sandhills issues where the pipeline was running through the sandhills in Nebraska.
A really sensitive area, habitat, important to water quality.
So TransCanada moved it. They said, okay, we'll move it out of the sandhills. And the governor said, great, approved. And then someone challenged that approval. And now that's in the state Supreme Court. So the president's going to say, I'm not deciding on this pipeline until that's resolved, which might still be another few months. The second thing is, Congress doesn't have the authority to approve pipelines. That's the authority of the State Department and other department agencies, including the EPA, the Department of Transportation. They all weigh on that. And then the State Department approves it, and the president has to sign off on all of that. It's not Congress's responsibility to force construction projects like
right.
that.
There are systems projects. Set up for these approvals within our government.
Exactly.
And this is not.
So and this is in it. So he's going to veto it. Like I say, immediately. And he gets now. Here's the challenge. Of course, when it gets vetoed, it goes back to the Senate and it has to have 2/3 approval to override the veto. Now, yes, there's 2/3 to override it in the House of Knuckleheads, the House of Representatives. But the Senate needs 67 votes, and the Senate doesn't think they have 67 votes to override that veto, because it would require a number of four more Democrats who didn't vote for the pipeline to begin with to get from 63 to 67. So there's the architecture there to how this, what's going to happen, why it's happening, and whether or not it'll get over, the veto will get overridden. And it's not over. Even if the veto doesn't get overridden, Mitch McConnell said, this isn't over. We're coming back.
Right. You know, we're gonna do this again. This has become like the war cry, the battle cry.
Yes. Okay. and a couple other things. Just real quick. Remember, they talk about this being an 1,800-mile-long pipeline. It's not. It's only 800 miles, 300 miles or so in Canada. So We're not building that. 700 miles of this pipeline is already built. Hey, everybody, while we were all arguing about the pipeline running from Steel City, Nebraska down to the Houston is already constructed. It's already pumping oil. So this is about 700 or 800 miles from Montana, through Montana, South Dakota, and Nebraska, down to Steel City, Nebraska. That's it, three states.
So not that many jobs, not that much work.
About, and I talked to somebody in the pipeline business, they say this is about 1,500 full-time jobs. That's it. And for less than 2 years, because now it's
right,
not 1,100
it's
miles.
Short-term
it's 700 miles.
Piece,
all right,
so
this is not a jobs problem. And then once the pipeline's in operation, even TransCanada says it takes about 35 people to oversee and monitor the pipeline on a day-in and day-out basis.
So long-term, 35 jobs.
There you go. All right, that's the latest on the XL pipeline. We got a couple more minutes. Let's get to what's going on at Swanner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I wanted to take a minute to talk about, you know, what I actually do in my real job at the Swanner Eco Center. And one of the things we have going on right now is our mountain lion exhibit.
Yeah.
And it's called Mountain Lions, the Story of Pumas and People. And it's only open through the end of March during our normal hours. So I wanted to get that out there. If you haven't seen it already, you've got a month to do so, to get into the Eco Center. And we've got, you know, the exhibit itself, but there's also a Mountain Lion Olympics. It's like a challenge that, you know, we designed for the kids that attend the exhibit. But I think just as many adults do. Do the Mountain
sure.
Lion Olympics. Yeah. So you get to compare yourself to
the Mountain Lion Olympics.
Yeah.
So what is
can
that?
Can you drag as much as a mountain lion? Can you jump as far?
I can bench press way more than
as
a mountain
much
lion.
As a mountain
I know that.
Is your peripheral vision as good as a mountain lion? You can measure
yes.
it. Yes. Chris says with absolute authority. Yes, it is, actually.
Really?
And yeah, we've got a touch table for kids and activities and all kinds of things going on. So
I've heard there's actually three or four mountain lions actually walking around the place. Is that true?
Just prowling the perimeter of the Eco Center.
Prowling, that's the right
no,
word.
No, but the fun part of it is
stalking.
That we have like, we get tons of reports now because we have this exhibit. People think, oh yeah, I'll call Swanner and tell him. And so we hear all these stories about mountain lions in the area.
Really?
And so we have a like kind of like a little storyboard where when people come in, they can write their sighting and post it on the board. But yeah, they've been seen all over town. I mean, they're here. You just don't see them very often.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now all of us, you bring up this
yep,
issue and
exactly.
all of a sudden everyone's seeing one.
Yeah. Or has a story.
Or has a story mm-hmm. about seeing
and
one.
And I think it's just, you know, you work hearing all the stories in one place. We're collecting all of these things in one place. And so it's been really interesting. We've heard a lot from Pinebrook and the Sun Peak area. But by no means is that the only area of town. I mean, it's literally like
have
all
you,
throughout.
So okay, well, has there been yeah. any on the Swanner Preserve?
Yeah, not, you know, like no. that we know of this year, but in past years we've had people call in and say, I saw a mountain lion.
Really?
Yes, and you'll hear from several people too, so it's not just like a mistaken identity for it. Yeah, exactly.
It's always calling in.
Yeah.
The Puma guy.
Yeah.
Pumas and people.
Yeah, Puma is just another name for mountain lion.
I know, that's cool.
Yeah, so one more month of the
one
exhibit.
One more month, all right.
So Chris, you got to get down there.
I am, because I want to
come see the exhibit.
Test my Olympic abilities.
That's right.
My Puma Olympics. All right, that's a deal. I will try to
perfect.
Get down there.
We can document your
and then
success
we'll talk about
and
it
post
on the show.
It on Facebook.
All right, we got to wrap up. We have a minute to thank our... thank our underwriters and sponsors who make this show possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
and Vail Resorts.
And as always, you can join us on Facebook at KPCW This Green Earth.
This is KPCW 91.9 FM Park City.
Only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Here's NPR News.
Assessing testimony by Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen on Capitol Hill this hour. NPR's John Itzy reports investors, businesses, and consumers were hoping Yellen would provide more detailed guidance on when the Fed will begin raising interest rates.
The Fed has held its benchmark short-term interest rate near zero for more than 6 years to support growth. Until last week, most economists thought Fed officials would start raising rates at their June meeting. However, minutes of the Fed meeting in January, released last week, contained cautious comments that convinced some analysts the Fed might wait until later in the year. But on the other hand, a blockbuster jobs report that came after that January meeting may have convinced Fed officials to stick to a June liftoff. John Itzty, NPR News, Washington.
A short time ago, Yellen stressed patience on the interest rate hike issue. She says the economy is making progress but is still healing. The Eurozone is endorsing the list of economic reforms Greece proposed so that it could secure a four-month extension on its international bailout. The agreement comes after marathon negotiations to keep Greece afloat. Athens had been pushing for less strict cost-cutting measures that it said drove down its economy, but Germany and others wanted Greece to stick to its austerity measures. The head of Veterans Affairs, Bob McDonnell, has apologized for misrepresenting his military record. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports McDonnell told a homeless man that he served in special forces.
The exchange was caught on camera by CBS News and first reported in the Huffington Post. VA Secretary Bob McDonald was talking with a homeless man in Los Angeles as part of a push to get homeless veterans in housing. The man said he was a special forces vet, and McDonald replied he served in special forces also. Bob McDonald went to Ranger School and served in the 82nd Airborne Division. He did not serve in a special forces Ranger regiment. McDonald apologized for the error, saying he had no excuse, and the White House reportedly has accepted his apology. Quill Lawrence, NPR News.
Mixed reactions today to a Manhattan jury's decision this week to award more than $200 million in damages to 10 families, U.S. families, who sue the Palestinian Authority and the Palestine Liberation Organization. They said the PAPLO were liable for attacks in Israel more than a decade ago that killed dozens of Americans. Palestinian official Hanan Ashrawi says neither was responsible.
We maintain that the charges are baseless, unfounded, and still unproven. There is no direct causality and no direct link between the actions of these individuals and between the decisions of the PAPLO.
But the Israeli government says the decision holds Palestinian officials accountable when they declare that they do not finance terrorism. This is NPR News. Canadian National Railway and its 4,800 employees have reached a last-minute settlement to avoid a strike. From Toronto, Dan Karpinchuk reports the railway had threatened to lock out the employees if no deal was reached by 11 p.m. last night.
The agreement came less than an hour before the deadline. The talks had resumed Monday morning with the help of federal government mediators and continued well beyond the late-night deadline. After 5 months of negotiations, the contract dispute had reached a crisis point, CN saying it would lock out the 4,800 workers after the union said it would call a strike vote this week. The president of Unifor, Jerry Diaz, says the deal finally came together when the railway realized the government was not going to interfere. The threat of back-to-work legislation last week prompted Canadian Pacific Railway and its union to end a one-day strike by 3,300 employees. For NPR News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
Dozens of people are being treated for injuries from a rail-related incident in Southern California.